Jesus is the guest preacher. He's not on our pulpit supply list, so I apologize for that. But he's the guest preacher this morning in this particular synagogue on the Sabbath. He's leading, participating. He's trying to see how they do things, figuring out how to mix in the way you do as a guest preacher. But he's also trying to speak a message to these people who he does not know as well. And as he's doing that, he sees someone. And that person catches his attention and triggers his compassion. It's a woman that we are told has been crippled for 18 years. Now that's kind of a backstory information that the narrator has given us. I doubt Jesus knew that at first glance, as if she had a sign on her neck or something. So the question is, what does he see when he first lays eyes on her? What does he feel? What is it that he's responding to as he stops things and calls her out of the margins into the center? Does he relate to her in some way, to her contorted body? Does he react to the fact that she seems to be ignored by all these others? What is it, do you think? Jesus is the outsider here, in a sense. He's the outside critic, the person who comes in and sees how everyone relates to each other from an outside position. He sees the things that sometimes when we're too close to it, we don't see ourselves. And it's kind of a comfortable position in some ways. We all like being the outside critic, don't we? Pointing out everyone else's faults. It's somewhat comforting at times. However, there's something to a new perspective that is helpful. A new perspective that is able to see how a group functions, how they relate to each other, to see their blind spots. Jesus comes in and sees their blind spot, quite literally. A person who they don't see seems to be what we get a sense of. Here is this woman who has been crippled for so many years, standing in the margins. And so they come and they listen and they debate God's law, but they do not really see this person in any significant way. And while the synagogue leader will proclaim there are 6 days to address this woman, they have not used those 6 days to help her for 18 years. Blind spots. We all have them, don't we? We who like to think and contemplate in our own timing and our own safe places are probably quite guilty of such gaps. The places where our faith doesn't quite meet up with life on the ground, where our compassion does not extend, where our inconsistencies get exposed. And when we consider that Jesus reduces the substance of God's law to the command to love the Lord with all of your being, and to love your neighbor as you love yourself, there's a real risk there that we would fall short of all that for good reason. Loving God, loving ourselves, loving all of our neighbors. How do you address such a big challenge? To love in such encompassing and penetrating ways. How do you go about fulfilling that? Does it ever feel overwhelming? Perhaps impossible to live out perfectly? And so the question is what guides you in doing that? I ask that because there's an aspect to this story that catches my attention. For not only is there this suffering person in their midst, who folks seem to have passed over continually, but more so, when Jesus does act on her behalf, this rift arises or comes to the surface. Do you hear it when we read the story? A divide between those who are guided by passion and intuition and those who adhere to rules and policy, to law. Jesus sees a woman bent over, and he responds by giving little to no attention to laws, protocol, such things. He doesn't ask for the book of church order to see if this is acceptable. He just does it. He sees, he feels, he acts. The synagogue leader and the others react not to the woman, but to what? To the infraction. They are okay with her being bent over. They are attentive instead to the fact that Jesus is healed on the Sabbath. There is plenty of time for healing. Why do you have to go break Sabbath laws? What's the deal with that? You can object to a law. You can even want to change it. You can figure out how to work around it. But you don't just go breaking laws, right? How do you mitigate the overwhelmingness of loving? Do you go by your shoot from the hip? Or do you try to hold it all in check with order and policy? Which do you relate to more? The one guided by passion and intuition? The one who feels and acts? Or the one who wants to talk about it and look at policy and procedure and figure out what the long-term goals are and how we're going to manage all these things? Which one do you relate to more? Now, I realize this may sound like a trick question or an unfairly weighted question because, you know, one side gets Jesus and the other side doesn't. Who wants to be the rule follower that Jesus rebukes? And there's probably a tendency for us to want to give the Sunday school answer to make sure we give the right answer, which is always Jesus, right? All Sunday school answers end with Jesus. But apart from such weighted aspects, how would you really answer? What do you relate to more? The passionate and intuitive, or the procedure and proper order-minded approach? I push the question for this reason, because I think it's more complicated than a straightforward answer, one or the other. Because I think that even if we are the staunchest rule follower, there comes a moment, perhaps it's for a child, or a parent, or a family member, or a friend, or someone who we sympathize with, that all of a sudden we're willing to break the rule for. All of a sudden our rules dissolve a little bit. We become a little more open to the gray, moved by passion and compassion perhaps. And for those who operate by passion and intuition, on the other hand, there inevitably comes a point when you encounter somebody who triggers in you the desire for rules and standards and justice and payback. And you want to hold them to the strictest of standards. Yes? These are slippery things, aren't they? So the real question then is, who moves you? What causes you to bend the rules? What causes you to act? What causes you to call somebody to the front who's been marginalized? Whose dilemmas get you out of your seat and make you an advocate? Now, the synagogue leader doesn't come off well in this story, though I suspect he's not a monster. I suspect he got into his position because he probably has a level of compassion. But he's obtuse to this woman. He does not feel her pain. He does not see the world through her eyes. Doesn't know what cripples her, probably, or what it's like to move through the world so contorted. And not only does he not act on her behalf, he is a part of a system that continues to not see her and marginalize her. So perhaps another question that deserves our attention, deserves our asking, is what does your system serve? Who does it serve? Because rules and order and procedures are not benign. They are discovered and enacted by people for purposes. Right? They're not as neutral as we would like to think they are. So let me ask this question. If you are sitting in the synagogue that we get a window into through this story, if you are sitting in the synagogue crowd, where would your attention be? Who would you relate to? Who would incite your anger? Who would trigger your sense of injustice? On this particular Sunday, when we're going to be spending time after worship listening to Anne speak of the immigration crisis, this is a fitting story to contemplate, to raise the question of who in the crowd incites our compassion and who incites the rule follower in us. It's an important question because none of us, I would suggest, are consistent. Who moves us? And how are we grappling with this all-encompassing and penetrating call to love God with our whole being, to love ourselves, and to love all of our neighbors? And how do we navigate those lines of compassion? Now, a sermon, as we're taught in seminary, like other forms of speech, are supposed to have a point. It's a problem sometimes. They are meant to convey or convince or educate. But a sermon is supposed to advocate for a particular interpretation. It's supposed to tell you how to apply it to your life and all those fun things. But a story, a good story, like this one, may not always, at least not in the same way, not be reducible to a simple point like a fable. A story invites us in to see the world differently, to look around, to be a type of mirror to ourselves. A hall of mirrors, perhaps, where we can see where we are blind, where we can see from different angles, where we can entertain questions and ambiguities. And so, I invite us this morning to not necessarily find the point or to immediately co-opt the story to our preconceived conclusions, but to enter the story, to consider what is it that you feel and who do you feel for? Whose contorted body and experience are outside of your view? You go through your day and you don't even see it. And who incites your anger and sense of indignation? Is it the rule breaker or is it the rule keeper? I invite you to consider how you hold and try to live out that all-encompassing and penetrating call to love with your whole being. To love the Lord, to love yourself, to love your neighbor, to love the person bent over by some spirit, some force they can't control. For that bent over person does seem to be the person, the type of person that consistently evokes Jesus' compassion, evokes Jesus' passion, the one who needs relief and help, compassion, hope, forgiveness, the one who needs to be seen and treated with dignity, to be the person who finally gets privileged, who gets the attention and the compassion. So who gets your compassion? Who do you feel for? What action does it lead you to? And how are you grappling with that call to an all-encompassing and penetrating love? And all God's people said, amen. I invite you to stand as you're able to sing our hymn, and then we'll have a moment for your responses.